Kanga Audio.
A quick thanks before we start the show. Filmmaking Confidential, the book, is getting rave reviews from readers, filmmakers, film professors, and even people in creative fields other than filmmaking. I just want to say thank you to all of you who ordered it and for your support. If you haven't yet picked it up and you want to learn my filmmaking secrets, Filmmaking Confidential is for you. It's available wherever books are sold in most countries around the world. Order by visiting Audible or Amazon. To find out more, check out filmmakingconfidential.com and stevebalderson.com. Thank you. I'm Steve Balderson, and you're listening to the Filmmaking Confidential podcast. Each week, we meet with filmmakers, writers, actors, artists, and other notables. Many episodes include questions or commentary from other filmmakers listening to the conversation. Today's guest is Garrett Swan of the Santa Barbara Swans. In addition to modeling and campaigns for IBM, T-Mobile, Oprah Magazine, Brooks Brothers, Allen Edmonds, To Exist, Underwear, and Mr. Turk, Garrett is also an actor. His television credits include such series as Fashion House and Unusually Thick. Also an actor in feature films, Garrett appears in several of mine.
I don't think I can kiss him yet, because I'm a Christian.
Me too, man. Christians make the best lovers. Remember, Judas kissed Christ.
That's Garrett Swan in my film, The Casserole Club, starring opposite Susan Traylor, Daniela C., and Kevin Richardson from The Backstreet Boys in his film acting debut.
This is Garrett Swan of the Santa Barbara Swans.
Let's just start right there and tell me, when did this start, the Garrett Swan of Barbara Swans?
I have a friend named Howard Sussman, and he used to introduce me. He would be like, "Hello, this is Garrett Swan of the Santa Barbara Swans." So I use it in all of my castings and everything, and apparently it books me the job. And I just use it. I just had a Zoom casting now for a commercial, and I introduced myself as Garrett Swan of the Santa Barbara Swans.
And what did they say?
They laughed.
I think it's brilliant. I think it's totally brilliant. I want to tell people how we met, because I was just thinking, at first I couldn't remember, and then I remembered what it was.
You sent me a Facebook message.
Yes, I was casting for Casserole Club, or maybe I hadn't even started casting yet, but I was either writing it or we were about to. And when I saw your picture, I thought, well, this person is not only a character that needs to be in this movie, but he's already costume, hair, and makeup ready.
it was my groovy 60s looking glasses.
Totally. Yes. And yes. I don't remember what I said, but I remember reaching out and saying, "We have to talk," or something like that.
Yeah. You're like, "Hello, I'm Steve Balderson." And I said, "Hello, Mr. Balderson, who are you?" And you said, I'm doing a movie. And I was like, who the fuck are you? But the weird coincidence was that your dad's partner was best friends with a friend of mine in Santa Barbara. So we had a one degree of separation.
Oh my God, that's right. I totally forgot that.
Yeah. And so when you finally had casted me in the Casserole Club, I saw my buddy Artie and I said, oh, and I was with a group of people and I said, oh, I got cast in this movie. It's called The Casserole Club, directed by Steve Balderson. And he goes, I know Steve Balderson. I go, you do? He goes, yes. And then he told me the whole story. And I was like, that's really weird. I've never had any connection with Kansas, Wamego of all places.
Well, and that's rare that we would literally be that close connected without even knowing it.
Yeah. I mean, it's all about 6 degrees of separation, except I always think with me, Kevin Bacon can move over because it's 1 degree of Garrett Swan. There's my ego.
No, but it's true. But also in entertainment, I think it's a lot lower than 6 degrees, first of all. I think 6 degrees applies to anybody in the world. But like, you know, between the two of us, we're 1 degree or two at the most from almost anybody that you could imagine.
Yes, 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 totally. Did you ever see that movie, 6 Degrees of Separation?
I did.
Yeah, yeah. I actually auditioned for it, for one of the bratty kids.
Oh, that would have been great.
It would have been great to work with Stockard Channing.
Of course it would. Okay, what came first? Tell me about when you started acting, first of all. Like, were you a theater kid in high school, or did it just sort of happen?
Well, my mom saw like this inherent, I guess, talent in me. I don't know if I'd call it a talent. But my mom saw my interest of performing and singing, and I loved all of that. So she kind of encouraged that and put me in little acting workshops, like when I was, you know, when I was approaching being a teenager. So when we were signing up electives in junior high school, I picked theater arts, and it just stuck. And so and I auditioned for the fall play, and I got into the fall play. And then it was we did Heaven Can Wait, and I played the plainclothesman. And I had one line in the entire play: maybe he should call a psychopathic. And that was my line. And then, but they added something. So every time the detective spoke, I would repeat the last word of every line. So like, how are you? You. Like, are you doing well? Well. So I would constantly, like, throughout his dialogue. So they bumped up my character a little bit from one line to like many words. And then that year in seventh grade, I ended up getting the lead in a play called What a Life, playing Henry Aldrich. And it just kind of stuck. And I got my little start of like feeling like a little Santa Barbara celebrity.
Amazing. And so then you graduated, you went to... Where did you go to college?
While I was in high school, I was doing all the plays, and I was in every play, every musical. And then I was doing all the other musicals during the summer in Santa Barbara City College, because they had Santa Barbara Theater Group. So they would do these and they would invite like famous actors into the shows, and a lot of TV stars who wanted to do like some summer stock theater. So I would do that every summer. And then my senior year in high school, I ended up doing a City College production of Brighton Beach Memoirs playing Eugene. And that kind of took me to the next level. It was like, okay, where am I going to go to college? And I auditioned, and I had an opportunity to go to USC, but I had gone to New York, and I literally, when I crossed the Queensboro Bridge, I was like, I want to be there. It was like a magical kingdom. It was like going to Oz. It really was. I was like Dorothy in Oz. And I auditioned. I had one of the actors I'd worked with in Brighton Beach Memoirs. He had gone to Circle in the Square in New York. So I got auditions at Juilliard and Circle in the Square, and I got into Circle in the Square. So I studied for 2 years in New York. I went to a year of City College, Santa Barbara City College, and then I went to 2 years at Circle in the Square. It was a conservatory.
And then did you stay in New York for a while, or did you come back to California?
So after after school, I stayed in New York for another few months. I got agents out of it because we did this showcase and all these. And then I was auditioning for films like 6 Degrees of Separation, like all these major films at the time. But there was, and then I was like, I should go to LA. So I went to, and then I moved to LA in 1990. And I was there for 2 years, you know, and it was really difficult at that time, because it was like, I was a trained actor, you know, I'd gone to a brilliant acting school. I was taught by the same professors from Juilliard, right? So I was a trained actor, but it, you know, Hollywood is such a, it's very inconspicuous. Everybody's trying to be something there. So I felt like it was one of those places where I didn't feel like I fit in. And it was really hard because everyone's like, oh, you come off too gay. And so I would like agents and managers wouldn't take me on. And it was just a real struggle. And I, so I ended up working in the industry. I ended up being an art director for television. I started as a PA, and then I started working behind the scenes for many years. But I, you know, I got commercials, and I got, oh, there was a crack in my voice. I don't know where that was from.
Well, you're maybe, a growing boy.
But, yes, exactly. It was my adolescence that came and revisited itself. When I was, you know, when I was in LA, you know, I got little bit parts, like I did like MTV stuff and so on and so forth. And it wasn't until 2006, I kind of was like, I was getting really frustrated. I was, you know, I was booking commercials and that's national commercials and such. And I had my SAG card and it was all great. And then finally, I was just kind of a bit of a train wreck. And so I was like, I'm quitting the industry. I'm going to go be a floral designer in Santa Barbara. And so 3 days before I was moving to Santa Barbara from LA, I get a call from my friend Margaret, and her husband, Aaron, was directing a pilot for a new Fox series called Fashion House. And he said, will you please come and audition for it? Not kidding. We literally went to the, we were on our way to the U-Haul. I was dressed in this fabulous outfit. I show up at the audition. I do that. My dad's in the truck waiting for me. We go get the U-Haul. I moved to Santa Barbara. And a week and a half later, they called me in for a screen test. So when I was at the screen test, I saw we were paired with different people. And I was paired with this guy named Tony Tripoli. And we were both kind of salt and pepper. We kind of looked alike. And then I looked at all the pairs. And I looked at him and I went, oh, my God, we are so booking this. And then I asked the casting director, I go, who's producing this? And she goes, a guy named Paul Buccieri. And I go, from reality TV, Paul Buccieri? And she goes, yes. I go, I used to art direct for him. And I was like, I so got this part. And so we went in, we killed it in the casting. And then I found out a week later that I got hired. And then it ended up, it was a pilot. And there was a bunch of unknowns, like Taylor Kinney was an unknown at that time, and now he's on Chicago Fire. Natalie Martinez was an unknown, and now she's been on every series known to man. And then they recast it and added Bo Derek and Morgan Fairchild and Tippi Hedren. And so I got to, that was really iconic for me because I loved The Birds and I loved Alfred Hitchcock movies. So that was really great to meet Tippi Hedren. But it was, so we ended up going to series and it was a telenovela and we shot 65 one-hour episodes in 16 weeks.
That's amazing.
Yeah, so that was great. And so my career went from 0 to 100. And then after that, I just couldn't book any work. Like it was, you know, all the other actors were all going on new pilots and they were, you know, and the show aired, it was great. I got, you know, it was kind of before social media. So if we had had social media, I think that could have propelled me to a better career. But back then we didn't have that. We had Facebook maybe, but no one was really saying, oh, you need to market on Facebook. And right. So it's kind of like after that, my first job I booked was a reenactment on America's Most Wanted.
Amazing. Do you remember what you did?
Yeah, it was some crazy woman who loved Judy Garland and she was this heavyset woman that stole the kids from the husband and he couldn't find his children and I was the husband and it was just really bizarre. But it was really my forte into this independent world. And then, you know, I ended up producing and directing and wrote my first little short film, the one I did called The Plot. And I ended up producing that and I got into the Santa Barbara Film Festival. And so I started doing all these short films. And then this magical human being named Steve Balderson came along. and here we are traveling all over the world doing all these independent films, which is so exciting.
Yeah, that was a really fun time. I was also thinking about that because I loved filming in Hong Kong.
And, oh yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Well, and okay, so your comic timing is genius. And
thank you.
You're hilarious. And in that movie especially, you're ridiculous and amazing, right? But
thank you.
But then you can also do like, in Casserole Club, it was hardcore drama. I mean, it was a little campy, but it was still like,
right,
you know, straightforward. It wasn't like a joke, you know?
I thought my best part in your movies was playing Dr. Proctor.
Oh, completely. Dr. Proctor was great, probably because of the accent.
Yeah, and, that was the funnest scene I think I've ever done on camera. And I think it was the best acting I've ever done in my entire life.
Okay, I'm going to play a snippet from that.
Have it. We looked everywhere.
It is urgent we find that pendant, dringlich. That is why the bitch follows you. That's what she will kill to get.
What is so important about this pendant?
Because, Junge, it contains die Datei.
Die what eye?
Datei. Datei. Die Datei.
Hogan's Heroes. This guy reminds me of the creepy soldier on Hogan's Heroes. Nothing! I tell you nothing!
Ah, Chung! What, you think this is a joke?
No.
I need to know, where is die Datei?
Oh, man, I'm sorry about the Hogan's Heroes thing.
You stupid little twits. Do you have any idea what is going on here?
No.
Bonnie is dead because of that pendant. I need to know your every move, comprende? Everything Bonnie said to you, everything she did before they killed her. People's lives are at stake, Dummkopf.
I've played the most random characters in your films, like the most bizarre little cuckoo things. But that makes me think I've never felt like I was a male lead. I was always a sidekick, or I never felt like the only lead I really felt like I was strong in was when I was in Brighton Beach Memoirs. But Eugene was a character that was almost like he was like an outcast, you know, he was different. So that I could identify with that. And I usually identify with the more quirky character versus the male lead who's, you know, that I never, even Sterling was a very sidekick character. And he was, you know, he was just a repressed, trapped human being that couldn't be his true self, you know, in a time when homosexuality was just was really not heard of. It was a bad thing. It was you were perverted.
Garrett Swan. Another great guest is Academy Award nominee and Golden Globe winner, Sally Kirkland.
And my girlfriend had told me, Sally, you're going to have to fuck him. You're going to have to. This is the lead role in The Godfather. And I said, but I've been celibate for however many months I can. I'm celibate. And she said, Sally, this is Francis Ford Coppola. You're going to have to fuck him.
You can hear my full interview with Sally at filmmakingconfidential.com or by subscribing for free to this podcast. We'll be right back with Garrett Swan. Stay with us. I'm Steve Balderson, and this is the Filmmaking Confidential podcast. We're back now with Garrett Swan.
I just recently saw Boys in the Band. You know, that was written in 1968, and it was a play about a group of gay men. It was very controversial. So a year later, here comes Stonewall. So there were gay riots, you know, it was talked about, but it was, I mean, that's New York City versus a town like Palm Springs, right? Although God knows, you know, there was that really fascinating documentary called Scotty and the Secret History of Hollywood. Yeah. And I met Scotty Bauer, and it's fascinating who he slept with. Like, he knew everyone who was gay in Hollywood, and there were so many of them. But they couldn't be there. And what's sad, and there was a lot of talk about that he was outing all these people. And I don't think he was. I think he was telling a story of people that were really trapped and couldn't be themselves.
Well, and I think that the story goes, I mean, you and I know enough people who some of them still aren't out necessarily. But, you know, but everybody knows. It's like
John Travolta. Excuse me.
But it's like, you know, the people in Ohio.
I hope I don't have COVID. Sorry.
What I'm saying is that, like, the people in Ohio don't know this, you know, but like people in the industry, you know, it's like when Jodie Foster gave her, you know, speech at the Golden Globes that year, she was like, everybody already knew, you know, it was like she never felt the need to say anything because everybody knew who knew or whatever.
Yeah.
After we worked together, did you have another TV show or another, did you do another film with someone else or?
So right afterwards, I ended up meeting a producer in Santa Barbara. They were shooting Alan Thicke's reality series. And he said, he called me one day. We just became friends because he was in town. We met on Grindr. Which I no longer have that app. So, we became buddies, and he said, oh, I need a gay man for this scene. And I'm like, I'll do it. And so I showed up on set, and it was a posse of Tanya Thicke. And I was there with another actress named Mary Jo Eustace, who was the ex-wife of Dean McDermott, who dumped her for Tori Spelling. Tori and Dean show. So she and I, we were killing it on this series, because it was all improv, you know, it was all a circumstance. And so the producer actually came up to us and told Mary Jo and I, and they're like, you guys are like really good on camera together. Anyways, they kept on calling me back for other scenes on the show because they really loved me. So, and I ended up becoming friends with the executive producer because I was trying to pitch a TV series with her in Canada. And so we became really good friends. And when they went to second season, she asked me to be a series regular on the show. But the way it was kind of controlled, I ended up only booking like two or three episodes or something like that. I worked one day with Alan Thicke, and it was probably the worst day of my life.
What happened?
It just became, because it was different. When I worked with Tanya, it was easier to communicate with her. They would give us story beats, and then it was just run with it. And they would maybe say, oh, say this. And then we would say, you know, and then we would just recite that. But with Alan, it was much more scripted. So it was like, I had to learn this scene and being directed by him, the director, and the writer. So I would, and they were all contradictory. So it was very frustrating. And so I would constantly be stumbling on my words. Plus I was playing a germ expert, which I had no idea what the hell I was doing. I had no, like they gave me a box with cotton swabs and petri dishes and said, okay, and go, you know? And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? And so it got really frustrating. And so I did maybe one or two scenes on that show with Tanya, and they were like, oh, we're gonna book you for 2 weeks. And then they canceled me. After that point, it was this kind of trigger. I'm like, I don't love acting anymore. It was really weird. Like that passion just kind of died in me for some weird reason. And I just felt like it was just too much of a struggle to, it's like every time when you look at me, like when I open my mouth, it's two different things and they're totally contradictory. So I kind of felt like maybe there's a new path. And then I moved to New York and I started modeling. And then that just kind of took off. I mean, I still do commercials and such, and I'll still do that because it's fun, you know, because they're like short little movies, right? So, and some of these commercials, all you have to do is stand there and talk, and there's no, it's all MOS, you know? So I don't mind doing that kind of stuff. I mean, if someone approached me and said, oh, we want you to play this role, like there's an opportunity right now for kind of this reality TV series. So we shot a sizzle for that. Like that kind of stuff. I feel like playing my persona is something I'm more interested in than, because there's a freedom to being yourself versus portraying a character, because there's so much that's entailed in portraying at being an actor. But I think the industry, I just kind of lost interest. I kind of lost interest in the way the politics were in the industry.
Totally hear you on that.
Yeah.
So then you started modeling and you started representing brands and you're quite successful doing that also.
Yeah. Yeah.
So in this sort of like, you know, act two of the Gerrit Swan story, and there, lots of travel involved.
Yes. Yeah, so
tell me.
So, you know, this idea of reinventing yourself is saying, here I am, I'm 50 years old, and what am I going to do with the rest of my life? And actually, a few years ago, I heard about that Instagram was such a great platform to showcase yourself. And And I heard this from a lot of millennials. So I just started growing my platform. And before you know it, my follower growing started. And it was kind of before the algorithms changed and on Instagram. And so I started growing. And then I started doing brand collabs on it. And it was more about for me as a modeling platform, but then because I had heard if you had a lot of followers, you'd get more jobs. So then what I ended up doing was, you know, doing all these paid partnerships with brands, and that kind of erupted in a good way, you know, and I found interest in fashion and lifestyle and health and wellness. So it was kind of like, here I am. I'm one of the oldest guys doing it. There's not many people doing this influencer thing. So it was interesting to be categorized with all of these, you know, these millennials. And here I am saying, I've got one up on you because I have more experience in life than you guys do. So I know way more about fashion because I've studied it and I've learned all through the ages from, you know, I worked in a vintage clothing store. I knew about every period of fashion from 1910 up to now, right? So yeah. A few years ago, I met a guy named Tom Spate, who was the president and CEO of a underwear brand called To Exist. And we had met in an event and we hit it off. We became the best of friends right away. And he goes, I feel like I could tell you anything. We just became like instant friends. So about a year and a half ago, he was let go and he was the president of Calvin Klein Underwear North America prior to that. And so about a year and a half ago, he calls me and he says, I have this idea. And I said, what is it? And he goes, I think you and I should do a brand together. And I go, that's really funny. I had the same idea yesterday. We're now growing a brand called Alphex, like redefining this idea of being an alpha male, this alpha male stereotype in the 21st century, that there's an opportunity for product to fit better, feel better, and be better. So we've created this brand, and I'm the CMO, so I have to create all the content. So here I am for my role as a performer, now shifting the gears and now creating and being the producer, because that's what I've always wanted to do. So now I have to produce all this content for the brand. So I get to produce videos on real life platforms, which will be like documentaries on men, and getting to work with filmmakers like you. And I get to create photo shoot content for, you know, all social platforms, for our website, for all of that. I'm kind of doing a full circle. So I get to be in that creative field again, where I get to tell real life stories. Because I think when I see films now, it's a great film I just saw. Have you seen Kajillionaire?
No.
Oh, it's quite good. Evan Rachel Wood. So just to backtrack, I have a interview show on Instagram called Undercovers, where I interview people in bed. And I just did an interview with Evan Rachel Wood. And a fascinating film, but I'm seeing a lot of the films that have more gravitas are the ones that are really telling this real truthful story. And that's one that dives in. It feels, you know, it feels very interesting and beautiful. Like, I think you would love that film. But I think, again, this is a going full circle as a producer. I get to produce all this content. So I think that's what I'm really looking forward to on building this brand is getting back to my creative mind again and being creative. I mean, I get to incorporate that with the fashion sense and all of those things. So everything I've learned through social media and Instagram, I get to now do in a brand.
Well, and you can go back and revisit your passion for being creative or even a performer, but the one who's in charge. So there,
absolutely.
You know, so right. It's like, you know, the instance on, you know, the show with Alan Thicke, which caused you to sort of lose that interest, was because of all this sort of chaos and people not knowing what's going on or telling you different things. And it's sort of like frustrating. And then the system's frustrating and the people right. are phony. And then now you're back there, but you get to be the one to make sure that the people who are part of the, you know, performing of this don't ever have that experience.
Right. And I get to work with people who I think are real and authentic and, you know, I think this is what COVID has done for us is gotten us into a place of looking inward. And I think more people have done that. I mean, and even the people who are mentally stressed and want to commit suicide, which is awful, but it's really talking about mental health, that our mental health is more at stake than it ever has been before. that there's totally. This there's this opportunity to really through our communities is to help people through this and be more compassionate. So I'm hoping that what's going to happen is that the industry is going to shift and that people are going to, there's going to be a new way of working. And I see that. And I think it's already changed, you know, like when I talk to my friends who are working on television series, I think this attitude and this arrogance is kind of fading a bit. I think there's a love, like the cast of Modern Family. Like I've met Jesse Tyler Ferguson on many occasions, and I see that what a unique, wonderful individual he is. I see that with the celebrities that I do meet, that there's not a pretension. I think there's this humanity that's happening, and even in the fashion industry, the attitude that's gone along, it's now all being shifted.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And I want to back up a minute to the your brand, because when I turned 40, I made the decision that I was going to only wear comfort, but I still wanted some, you know, style.
Yes.
But that's not easy to come across, you know, because a lot of things that are stylish feel terrible.
Well, exactly. And it's even about sizing, you know, what we're focused on is more sizes for more men. So we're going extra small to double XL, but we're also with our boxer briefs and our trunks, we're doing two leg widths. One's that's for guys with bigger legs, who are predisposed for have bigger legs just by genetics, and they're guys who work out. So if you have a medium waist and you have big legs, then they're not so tight on you. So we're,
oh, that's great.
And our focus also in our next phases is to do more true customization, that you can plug in all of the colors you want or blah, blah, blah. And you can have a customized pair of briefs or boxer briefs or whatever. So we're going to try to focus on that kind of model. So all we're sitting on is raw materials. So you can just go in and there's now technology that can do that, which is fascinating. And totally. And I think this idea of true customization, that because we want clothes that fit you, that's our goal. Guys only care about three things: quality, fit, and comfort. That's it. If whoever you ask, they want to look good, you know, but they want to feel good. So that's why we kind of, and then we're really telling this storytelling aspect to identify with this guy, that it's not saying, oh, look, we're inclusive. We just are inclusive. Like, regardless of sex, sexual orientation, race, or age, we're all the same. Like, we all want this, you know, so how can we all be better and help each other be better?
Yeah, I want to ask him, what's the main difference of the industry like 20 years, 25 years ago than from today?
Like I was saying, I think there's this difference in how people are treated. I think there's a difference on that there's a lot more respect. Like a friend of mine is the vice president at Warner Brothers TV. So she came to the set and we were talking, and she was talking about the craftsmanship of, she goes, these guys work so hard and they do such incredible work. Like, she was praising the work of just, you know, these laborers, these guys who are, you know, building these sets. And for her as an executive to appreciate that, I had such like respect for her. And I think there is this respect from these people, because she was a line producer for many years too. She worked on many television shows. So I see there's an endearing quality, and there's less drama from people. You know, I know that they want specifics, and it's a very tedious. There's a lot of, but you look at like shows like Schitt's Creek and the appreciation of the writers and the humanity. I think there's way more humanity now than there has been in the industry.
Yeah,
I think
there's many less isms, like less racism, less classism, yes. That kind yes. of stuff.
Yes. I mean, and the world has turned into a, you know, it's the films are less and TV's more, you know, these limited series are much bigger, and people, you know, your audience are wanting these, even though people haven't lost the love of doing films. You know, I mean, I'm seeing some independent films on these days that are fantastic still, you know, But I think there's this level of, you know, because the Harvey Weinsteins are out, you know, this Me Too movement really changed, really, because people had to look back and go, oh, I can't get involved in that anymore. They had to look at their own selves. So I think there's a respect and a consideration for others in the industry.
Like the fear, it's ending. There,
yes.
I feel like it was fear, you know, fear to yes. tell the truth, fear
yes.
to
yes.
to share the personal experience people suffer yes. in the industry, you know?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
I think that that's pretty remarkable, just to point that out, because honestly, you're right. It's like sort of a lot of the changes that have happened and the people that have spoken up about it, especially like Me Too, have yeah. gotten rid of all those evil guys who really were the ones that were sort of acting badly, not just to women, but to everybody.
Yeah, because women are now having a place in the industry way more than they ever have. And it's just growing. And I think women are less nightmares than or people are less nightmares than they used to be. You know, I think there's a tremendous compassion for accuracy in the way stories are told. And there's some really great, you know, there's no new story. There's so many different, you know, it's just the formula of how stories are told, you know? I mean, I was a big fan of Blake Snyder's book, Save the Cat, you know?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it was a great book because it really describes the type of stories. And when you compare, if a film comes out, you could say, oh, that's that story or that's that story. There's no real new stories anymore, you know?
Sometimes what I like to do is take two forms, like two storylines that we're used to, and then combine them. So it does kind of feel and make something new because right. you're taking like, yeah. oh, you know, Monster in the House and then some other type of movie and then just smash them, you know, and right. sometimes that's really fun.
I mean, but sometimes I just want to see something for the entertainment value, you know,
sure.
sometimes I just like, I love, you know, I was, friend of mine, he was a director, but he was also an editor for big films. And I said, oh, did you, and he's British. And I said, did you see the new Mary Poppins Returns? And he goes, yes. What did you think of it? I go, I loved it. Like, I love Mary Poppins. And he goes, apparently you don't have good taste in films.
Oh my God.
I'm not going to name his name because if he ever hears this, he'll get mad at me.
That's crazy. I loved it too. I thought she was fantastic.
She was too. You know, I mean, come on, like sometimes it's not going to be like this really heavy drama, you know? I mean, I watched Funny Girl last night, right? I hadn't seen that movie in years with Barbara Streisand. And it was it was great. There's great moments in it, but she won Best Actress for that. Like, I mean, it was a good performance, but I didn't think it was Best Actress worthy. But at that time, maybe it was.
Who knows? But it's also like, and I have this chapter in my book, it's just a movie, you know, it's yeah. not like, you know, something that's a big deal even.
right.
I had it's a question type asking. I'll try my best like to ask my question, but I'll start with a comment that Garrett, I love your energy. It's resonating all the way to here back and back again. And it's amazing. And oh, I you. Love it. And I sometimes in my life feel like I want to be like that, like take out, have all this energy, motivation, like all that passion and that you have. How do you use that in this industry? Like, when do you know when to use it? When's the right time? Who are the people that will appreciate and understand this energy? And when is the time where you should be like, okay, maybe I should be a little more reserved, a little more calm? Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes. It's you should see me in the morning. Like, I'm not like this. I'm literally like death becomes her. It's like putting on my Bondo. I think it's understanding the one thing that I, you know, with it's understanding energy. I think it's really understanding your environment and building that sense of where you're at and what place you're at. You know, if I'm going into if I know I'm going to go into a gala, I'm going to, it's almost like you have to play that role. It's like that we have to understand the space, and we like, if I'm going to meet the president of the United States versus the Queen of England, I'm going to behave in the way that, that's most appropriate. Like if I'm going to pitch a an investor, you know, a project, I'm going to have a certain behavior, right? It's really under, it's like reading the room, you know? I mean, that's what's come in my head. It's like, you just have to understand your space and who you're talking to. Like Steve Balderson's easy because I feel like I can just tell him anything and everything because we have that relationship. We've built that relationship. So there's a comfortability. I think it's finding the comfortability within yourself and being fearless and understanding that, you know what, it's okay to fuck up. And once you know that and you're okay with that, that's fine. It's like, oh, well, this wasn't meant to be. The next thing's meant to be, right? It's just really, I think it's just a philosophy in life. My philosophy in life is just like, you know, at the end of the day, I have nothing to lose. You know, when I was an actor and I was auditioning for roles and stuff like that, I was always so nervous because I was so trying to please everybody else. And the only person we need, we just need to be true to ourselves. And if we're true to ourselves, like I just had a casting and I was just like having fun with it. It was for a gay Santa Claus, right? And so all I'm going to do with that character is just be myself. And if I can be authentic with myself, and it's like owning the room, have all eyes on you. If you're pitching something, if you're pitching a project, it's like you really want, you want to be passionate about it. You want to feel it and you want them to feel it, you know?
I love that. Thank you.
You're welcome. Don't be afraid.
I think, Garrett, you have that natural energy, natural talent in you. You know?
Like, some days I don't have it. Some days I just want to crawl into the closet and hide. But, you know, but it's finding it. But sometimes those moments are good because they kind of make you go, okay, well, how can I make a difference today? And what can I do to better myself and better my career, better my relationships? How can I be a, you know, just a good person today, you know?
So that's great.
And if all of your followers, Steve Balderson, want to follow me on Instagram, it's the Garrett Swan with two R's, two T's, and two N's. Wait, are you guys all filmmakers as well?
I'm a screenwriter. I'm starring.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, I'm a writer. I've been writing for years, books. Now I want to do screenwriting and trying to find a place, but especially, in fact, I want to tell my story. That's all I care about.
That's great. Tell your story.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Amazing. Maybe I'll star you. I'm just kidding.
Amazing. All right. Thank you so much for being here. I love talking to you. You're amazing. And I could listen to you for hours.
Oh, stop. It's my annoying nasally voice.
No, it's good.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. That was fun.
Garrett Swan of the Santa Barbara Swans. You can find out more by visiting thegarrettswan.com. You can see Culture Shock at vimeo.com/on-demand/Culture Shock. The Casserole Club is available on Amazon Prime Video. Tune in next time for more Filmmaking Confidential. It is totally free to subscribe, and when you subscribe, you'll get upcoming new episodes automatically, and you'll have free access to all our past shows. The Filmmaking Confidential podcast is a production of Dakanga Audio and produced by myself and Ella Spencer. Our theme music is composed by Kevin Robles. For more of the Filmmaking Confidential podcast, head over to filmmakingconfidential.com. If you have a question about filmmaking you'd like answered on the podcast, send me an email using the contact form on the website. To learn more of my filmmaking secrets, be sure to pick up a copy of the book, Filmmaking Confidential, available on Audible, paperback, and ebook, wherever books are sold. I'm Steve Balderson. Thanks for listening and spreading the word. Until next time, keep making, keep doing, keep going.